Thank you. We're joined as usual by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning, Rhode Island.
And University of Rhode Island political science professor Maureen Moakley. Good morning, Maureen.
Good morning, everyone.
We're pleased to welcome as our special guest Mike Stenhouse, the CEO of the Rhode Island Center for Freedom and Prosperity, which bills itself as a free market think tank. Thanks for joining us, Mike.
Great. It's baseball season. Great day.
The state sales tax brings in almost $1 billion a year in state revenue. Mike, your center has a signature proposal to wipe out the sales tax in what you say would be a game changer for Rhode Island's economy. Tell us a little bit about this proposal and how could the state afford to do it?
First of all, we, like you said, we think we need some out-of-the-box thinking to turn this state around. But on the other hand, there's a lot of people who want us to feel boxed in by the budget. And we don't think the state should conduct its policy based on numbers. Our state isn't about numbers. It's not about a budget. It's about real people. It's about people who need work, who need upward opportunity for mobility and all that. So we've looked at a lot. We've bought a modeling tool, and we looked at a lot of ways to alter the tax structure in this state and see which one would have the biggest effect on jobs. And it is the sales tax. And the interesting thing about it is there is never that $900 million or $1 billion hit, nothing even close to that. Because of the dynamic effects we project to happen, which means more people will be working, more income taxes and other fees and such collected, that the difference in the first year, if we apply last year's budget increase and if we freeze the budget, it only costs us $100 million in the first year in additional savings. And we would think of that as an investment in jobs for our lower income people who we think would benefit mostly from this. Now, there's a lot of studies that show that low-income families in Rhode Island pay a higher proportionate of their income than do other families in other states. So we think this is something that helps every family and every business in the state.
How about that, Maureen? Do you think this is the kind of game changer that could really revive Rhode Island's economy?
My concern is, what do you do in the short term? In other words, you argue that down the road that you may reap these benefits in terms of employment. The fact is, to use your words, it's a projection. And real people need real social services. And how do you make up in the short term for, even if your projections are correct, for the real needs of real people here and now?
Sure, it's a good question. In our report, we do a month-to-month budget analysis and projection. And if you look at that, there's never really that big loss, and the savings don't necessarily have to come out of social services. But we think we're clearly setting up a scenario where we could be turning in welfare checks for paychecks, and we think that's better for everybody.
Scott, there doesn't seem to be a huge appetite for this proposal in the General Assembly, save from some people like Representative Jan Malik, who owns a liquor store on the border with Massachusetts. What do you make of this proposal?
Well, as far as Malik goes, it's a perfect statehouse frittata because there is, again, no conflict with his interest, obviously. Secondly, though, the big problem is that right now, Connecticut and Massachusetts are investing more money per pupil in education than we are. And the problem is, Maureen points out social services, but the big money in the state budget is only in two places, about 66% of it. It's in education aid and social services. And I think in the short term that a lot of students out there, particularly low-income students in communities that really rely on state aid, like Central Falls and Providence, are going to be hurt by this. And it's totally at odds with what Massachusetts is doing.
Well, speaking of education, controversy continues about plans to implement the high-stakes test known as the New England Common Assessment Program, or NECAP. Some students say the test is just too difficult. Other people say the test is an important part of strengthening educational standards. How do you look at this issue, Mike?
Well, I think there's two issues. One is just the general concept of testing teachers and students. I wonder if the publicity about this is just a way to divert attention away from the need to do something like that. We believe that we do need to have standards for students and for teachers and for schools for that matter too, so that parents know whether their kids are getting a good education or not, whether this is the right test or not, whether those people were genuine in trying to take it, whether they had another motive. I don't know, and that we haven't studied that yet, but we do believe we need testing.
Scott, when Mike was a Red Sox player, he got judged by his batting average. Doesn't it make sense that students should face some kind of standard?
Yes, although I will say a fourth graders are a lot different than Mike when he was playing for the Expos and the Twins and the Red Sox. I have to say, testing is good if it's used as a foundation, as a baseline, to try to change things in schools. I'm not sure it's fair to make it as a requirement for graduation from high school. I kind of like the way New York does it, where they have a Regents test and you get a Regents diploma if you pass kind of a college prep type course. And then you would get a general diploma if you didn't match that standard. I don't really think it's fair in a lot of respects as far as to use this test individually on students from vastly different backgrounds.
Maureen, Education Commissioner Deborah Gist has answered concerns by saying if students don't pass the test, they can study up, take some additional questions, and move on that way. What do you say?
I say that I think we have to go ahead with this at this point. I came out of the New York system and the region system, and it does work. But unless we want to create a two-tiered system, I think now we need to focus on this test. And if it's difficult, the idea that you can take it again, that you only have to improve, I mean, they've created a circumstance around it that make it totally possible. The best news is there are tutors and people and students now are really engaged in trying to do a lot of prep and remedial work in bringing these students up to speed. And I can tell you, when they get into college, you know, they shouldn't be taking, if they don't do it now, they're going to have to do it then. And it really creates a difficult system for students that are trying to access higher education.
Let's go around the panel with some questions for our guest, Mike Stenhouse from the Rodin Center for Freedom and Prosperity. I'll kick it off. Mike, the Projo did an analysis and found that drugstore giant CVS is paying about half of Rodin's 9% corporate tax due to a job development tax credit. Is that the right thing in your view?
No, we don't think so. We don't believe in corporate welfare either, or high degrees of it. I think the governor is moving in the right direction on this proposal. I mean, by lowering the rate and taking away some deductions or loopholes, the difference shouldn't be as large for CVS. So I think it's a move in the right direction.
Let's go to Scott.
I want to applaud Mike for the way that he has come out against crony capitalism, frankly. And I think
we call it crony socialism, but
well,
anyway.
Whatever. subsidized, let's say subsidies. So okay. I take it that you didn't think that the 38 Studios deal was such a good one.
Absolutely not. The EDC should not be putting taxpayer money at risk and trying to get in the game of gambling on winners and losers. Absolutely agree with all that.
All right, let's go to Maureen.
How, you know, in your free market philosophy, what do you think about the proposals of reconfiguring the EDC and making it part of a Department of Commerce within the government?
We think the EDC should just be eliminated, unless they're just going to be there to help coordinate activities. I mean, there are things you can do. We've heard stories, you know, it would be great if all the manufacturers to get together and get enough volume so that you could earn a berth at like a shipping dock or something, that kind of stuff. But putting taxpayer money at risk, if it's just reorganizing under a different name, under different leadership, it's going to be overly politicized. And you look at the history of the EDC in this state, it's never worked. I don't see why it's ever going to work. So we should think we should just end the folly and get rid of it.
There was a revealing story in the Washington Post this week that shows how there's a real boom and bust cycle to Woonsocket's local economy due to the influence of food stamp revenue each month. Scott, what do you make of that story?
Well, unfortunately, we have highest unemployment, among the highest unemployment in the nation, and folks can't starve. I think it's very sad that these people don't have opportunity to actually. There's no social program. Franklin Roosevelt says it. Every liberal I've ever talked to said, there's no better social program for the poor than a paycheck.
What was your reaction, Mike?
We agree. I mean, it was sad. I mean, it was hard to fight back to tears thinking of that story. And like we said earlier, we think instead of just making our number one priority, how do we give more government, you know, assistance to these people? I agree with Scott. How do we get them jobs? So that instead of worrying about a welfare check once a month, how about they cash in on a paycheck every week? We think that would be much better. And again, that's the main reason we think our 0.0 sales tax proposal, because we think we can make that transition happen. But it was very sad.
Maureen?
Yeah, well, I think that while I agree with you, again, I come back to my point about the short term. Inevitably, there are going to be people that need this program. It was part of the Great Society. And I think, you know, we have to be careful that there's no fraud and be diligent about keeping track of people. But nonetheless, this is a program that is needed, and I think it should be sustained.
Quickly, while you're here, Mike, we can't let you go without asking about how you think the Old Town team, the Red Sox, are going to do this year.
I have a sneaking suspicion their pitching will be a little bit better than we suspect. I expect some of the individuals to step up who have failed us and some of the ones who have been hurt. Offense, I'm concerned a little bit on offense. Defense, I think we'll be fine. I don't know that we'll be top of the division, though.
All right, we're out of time, so we have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us on Roundtable. Scott?
Go Sox.
Maureen?
Thank you.
And Mike Stenhouse, CEO of the Rodin Center for Freedom and Prosperity.
Concur. Go Sox.
We're funded by you, our listeners, and by the Robertson Foundation, continuing the commitment of its founder, Stephen Hamblett, to honest government in Rhode Island through in-depth political coverage. And if you enjoy the conversation, please visit our On Politics blog at ripr.org.